I was born in Preston, Minnesota, which is 150 miles south of St. Paul, Minneapolis. And my father's father was a medical doctor. And my father was born in 1859 and my mother in 1863. Her father was a farmer there in Minnesota. And so I was born in 1896. And last year, my daughter and I were in a store, and a boy was sitting at a table there in Fredmeyer, and he looked up and he said, "How old are you?" And I said, 90. Well, then we went on, and we were in a beauty shop, and the lady was in there, and she says, "How old are you?" I said, "I'm 90. But she said, "What year were you born?" I said, 1896. She said, 1896? 1896? 1896? It just poured one. And she repeated that 1896 three times and it got higher in the pitch. But when she knew I was 90, that was okay. But the year, she asked what year it was. Because she wasn't thinking to subtract. So, it kind of floors you, it just surprises you. Well, I was born there in Minnesota and I went to school and my folks moved to North Dakota, and you probably heard of Dickinson. Richardson was a town 25 miles east. My father was a bricklayer, and in Richardson, North Dakota, the Catholics built a cathedral. My father worked on that 2 different years in 1907 and 1909. So my folks moved to North Dakota in 1909, but I stayed in Minnesota and went to school that year and stayed with my old grandma there. But there were 6 of us girls in the family. My older sister earned her way through college, and all of us did teach country school. We didn't teach in the town schools. And you survived. Sometimes when I think about it, I think we were what we called church mouse poor at times, but we never went hungry. And when they moved to North Dakota, then the folks met on the homestead, in order for me to get a high school education, and the other young boys and girls, you had to go into the towns, like along the Missouri River. And I went to Mandan, North Dakota, and worked for my board and room. And people did the same across the Missouri River to go into the town, like on the other side of the Missouri, like Bismarck. And that's the only way that the children got a high school education. And the boys, and you worked for your room and board, and I was always treated very nicely. And and the men where I roomed and worked for my room and board, or when I taught country school, the men never did go to harm their wives, my father never did either. We didn't know anything about any man harm their wife like you hear of so much nowadays. We didn't know anything about that. So I don't know whether things have come out in the open more, but still, I worked for my room and board for 3 years in high school, and then my mother moved to town. So my 2 younger sisters could get to high school. And my sister Lois worked her way through college, and then she became superintendent of schools there in Dunn County out of Dickinson, North Dakota. And like I said, we all did teach school, the 6 of us girls.
No brothers.
No brothers. There were 2, 3 other children born, but they didn't live. And one, there was only one boy in the whole bunch of nine. And he didn't live either. So my father had a harem, I guess you'd call it. Only they didn't call it that. And I was brought up in the Presbyterian family, and we were taught to read the Bible. In fact, my old grandma, we lived in her house when I was a girl there in Minnesota, and there was a big old long hall from the front door to the main part of the building, but grandma had a room there on the side. And I used to go down to her room, and she had a coal burner stove with you. You put your coal in up here, and it was all cold all through there. And the coal burned down. And so she had gotten me to reading the Bible, and it was the Psalms. And I was telling my daughter this the other day. I said, when I got to the last psalm, I didn't say anything to my grandma. I said, I've laughed about it since. I bet she knew that I was done with a psalm, but I never said anything. And when I went back the next day, I told her then, oh, I was smarter, you know. And I think she probably had me read the story of Ruth. That is my thinking, I don't know, but I bet you that was. And so, anyway, as I said, they folks moved to North Dakota, and I worked for my room and board 3 years in Mandan and Bismarck, and then mother and father went to Dickinson, and my two sisters, Mildred and Ruth is living in Spokane, she's the only sister, and they left out 6 girls. And so I'll be 91 this week, my sister, she's 6 years younger than I am. So, but I understand that she's not too good. She was in the hospital last year a lot, and her husband, he couldn't stand it. He had to do something different too. He couldn't tell, so he landed in the hospital too.
What was your father's name?
James Gage Vile. G-A-G-E. That was my grandma's maiden name back there in Ohio. And I understood that my grandma was born near the shores of Lake Cleveland. And my father was born in Fort Dearborn. And Fort Dearborn is what Chicago came out of. So that's what I've always understood. Yeah, Fort Dearborn was for the nucleus of Chicago.
Yeah. What was your maiden name? Vale?
Vile. V-I-A-L-L.
V-I-A-L-L.
So, of course, V-I-O-L is a vial, you know, a bottle. There used to be a lot of T's in them.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. But it was an easy name to say. And
now, were you married back there, or?
No, I was married in Denver, Colorado in 1921. I wrote to my husband for 4 years before I ever saw him.
Oh, my.
It was one of those wartime correspondents. And he was over there, in France and Germany. But he was down there in Texas at a camp when it started. He had written to a sister of mine up there in Montana, and they had a hired man, she and her husband, and he had written to them and wanted them to write to him because he was lonesome. Jim answered the letter because the man had moved on, and she sent the letter on to me, and it was one of those deals.
Oh, that's cute.
One of those deals that we wrote to. So
What grades did you teach?
I taught country school.
All 8th grades?
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
All 8th grades?
Yeah.
How many students?
At one time? Gee, I never thought about that. Probably 12 or 15. I never thought about that. How many students was in the different school? Oh, where was there in North Dakota? That first school, there were German-speaking students, but they had learned enough English that they could get by. And then out of my, there in the, at the homestead where my father and mother were, in one section of that, one corner of that section of the, you were allowed to prove up on 160 acres. There was a family from Germany, and I think they were German Russians. And then there was a Russian family on the other side of the section. They were little elderly man and woman, and if they had any kids, they never showed up. But they had come from Russia, and I don't know how they ever got over to America. We tried to talk to them. And of course, we didn't try to learn Russian, and they had he learned to speak some English and stuff, but I don't think she ever did. But my sister Mildred would go over there sometime, and they made wonderful bread. But one time, my sister Mildred was 3 years younger than I. She came back home and told my mother. She says, this lady took the bread out of the oven, and so then make it look nice. She took her saliva and spread that on top of the bread, so mother never bought any more bread. But they were one of the Russians, and there were some Germans in town, and they wouldn't do that. But they made wonderful bread. I mean, it was really wonderful bread. And they'd put the big loaves up in there like this and take the butcher knife and come like this toward it. We all wondered whether they were going to cut their breasts off or cut their chin. But they never did. I'm glad I don't never have to live those days over again.
How did you get? You were married in Colorado. How did you get from North Dakota to Colorado?
Well, in 1920, the in Yellowstone National Park, they had put out the word, and it had been going on, I don't know how many years, that if teachers wanted to get a job to work at the camps, they get their room and board and $30-some dollars or something like that a month. Well, they could, so I rode, and they accepted me, and I rode the train there to Livingston, Montana. And then you took the shortcut, the train went down to Yellowstone Park at the north, and I worked at Mammoth Hot Springs. And I worked at what they call the camp. They had a big dining room there, but there were small cabins all around. But still had big hotels at the big camps. And if you felt rich enough or wanted to stay in those big hotels, if you could afford it, a lot of people did. But they drove their cars in and could park their cars at the camps and eat in the dining room. So I applied for a position, and I washed dishes all that summer.
Oh my.
In one of the big dining rooms.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. It was big community dining rooms. And they fed you in a kitchen different. And I left there, when the summer was over, I took the train and went to Portland and then down to Medford, where my sister Callie had moved, she and her husband. But he had been killed. And I said, I don't ever want to see any more lamb or any sheep. All I'd had all that summer was sheep, sheep, sheep. But then you, what you say you'll never do, why the, I lived in Wyoming and I lived up on a homestead in the sheep country where there was a, we were 40 miles from the railroad and this mountain was huge across and they said there was 1 million sheep on it. And my husband had homestead, had filed on a homestead, a merchant in town there in Casper wanted him to do that because of this 120 or 60 acres, the North Fork of the Powder River was the one end of that, and that was very valuable that they had to water the sheep once a day, at least once every 24 hours, and so that was why that was valuable. And so my daughter Janet, who was killed on Mount Hood, was 6 months old, and Juanita is living here, and my son lives in North Hollywood. But so I lived up on that homestead that summer with those three babies. And my husband would bring up groceries every week. There was a grocery store a mile below me that was built there for the sheep tenders that watched the shepherds across the mountain. They would go there and get the supplies, the salt and other supplies for the shepherds and take them back to their, what is it? What do you call it? Not, they had their homes on the trucks and everything. And so that was what happened in those days. And, but you survived, and you wonder how you did it. But you did. There was a spring not very far from the cabin door, and so my husband and another man had cut a barrel in two and so protected the spring and put a lid over it, but then the ditch was dug, so it run right down to the river, not too far away. So, you just did it, that's all, my husband.
How long were you on the ranch?
I was up there from the first part of July, like the 4th, until Labor Day. They had to start getting the, they started running the sheep up onto the mountain that the sheepmen did, the ranchers, like from Decoration Day to get their flocks up on the mountain. But then they started ahead of Labor Day to get them off. But sometimes there was a killing snowstorm and they lost their flocks of sheep. So they figured on having them down off that mountain right after Labor Day. So I don't know whether any of you know about a kerosene stove that was a canister like about that big around and stood that about that high, and you put the kerosene down in the bottom, and so that's what I had for heat. And then a friend of ours that they had a gasoline grill or whatever you want to call it, a little stove, they gave me the use, and I would cook what I needed to cook on that gasoline grill. So, and I had a revolver, and my boy, of course, was running all around, but in those days, you could, they bought oranges in wooden boxes, and so my husband had put it up along the wall above the cot that I slept in, and He couldn't reach it, the little boy couldn't. So I kept the revolver hidden up there. But the sheepmen never bothered me. And the man, and the, like I said, there was a the sheep store a mile below that was for the sheep tailors to get all the supplies for the sheepmen. And then there was a blacksmith. He lived out there in a truck or by the store, so he could work on the men's horses when they had to have them worked on them and like that. So that was...
Well, how many years did you do this?
Oh, I did. We went up there one summer.
Oh, just one summer.
And he built the cabin. And it was the next summer that I lived up there, and my husband wrote to the government, you know. Well, of course, he stretched the truth, but he really told the truth, too, in about, well, he told the truth about having to live up there such a short time, and that I was pregnant and so forth, which I was. So they allowed him to get by with signing up on the homestead, and we, after we were transferred down to Cheyenne, Wyoming, merchant that he had done that for went broke during Casper. So anyway, we sold that piece of land there after we moved down to Cheyenne, Wyoming, but the government transferred the men from Castro office down to Cheyenne. And then my husband was transferred to Denver, Colorado, and other places. But when I've told people, and I told this to a woman in a beauty shop one time years back, and she was spreading the story around that Bessie Jones was sure telling a lot about it. Once in a while, government combined the paymasters, so there weren't so many, and so we were transferred back to Denver, Colorado, and then I told this story to somebody there in Cheyenne in the beauty shop. And they would tell me, that, oh, officer, I was sure telling them some big lies about how I am a little chick. He'd come home and tell me, he signed a check to pay for Grand Coulee Dam for one of the bills. I would laugh.
Yeah. No. Okay. Then, I see your throat's starting to bother you, so we'll just stop here.
But well, I've told enough anyway.
Yeah. But now, you came to Cornelius in 1951.
I've been at Cornelius ever since then.
Yeah. That you came, and you and your husband ran the Red Robin.
That's right. We ran it to 1955. They call it Leo's Lair now. Mm-hmm. Black sheep, they allowed they like to have some black sheep in the flock. Like, I thought how many, the average, a black bird, what was 100 or?
I think it's about, at least when they put in goats, it's 1 to 100.
Yeah, I couldn't remember that. I was wondering, talking to my daughter here a while back about that, and I wasn't sure anymore.
And then all we have to do is count the black ones and
yeah,
count the black.
That's right.
Try to average that way. You've lost some of the flock.
Oh, yes.
What if he lost the black?
You know, one black?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't know.
That would really
that would be average.
They never go out alone. No. It's under my uncle said, and then, you know, if one black sheep's gone, that you've got a pretty good hunk of sheep that's got away from it. Or goats. Now, he used goats when he was there. He would count goats.
Well,
I know the black sheep were used too, so they could see. Oh.
We went to a small town. Stopped 30 minutes to. What's on the menu? And he said ham, ram, lamb, sheep, and mutton.
My husband was transferred to Helena, Montana, and I got to call that worked at his office, Chuck Morgan. He wasn't going to eat any sheep or any lamb. No, sir, he wasn't. He'd had a lot when he was younger. Well, I bought a leg lamb, and he and his wife, they loved us, and they had a little girl, a baby girl, and so they liked to eat at our house a lot. We had a leg lamb there one Sunday. And I fixed it up real good and everything, and he sat there and ate like a pig. His wife never gave it away. My kids didn't eat, my girl didn't eat it.
You're lucky.
Yeah, oh,
Gurney,
no.
A kid will battle.
Oh, they didn't. So they were, well, they were old.
He must have been had mutton.
When you've got a whole flock of sheep, say 2,000,
yeah.
Okay, if you put a 20 black sheep in there, say, and then all you do is count the black sheep and then times it by 100, and you know the whole flock's there. Because usually if one gets away from you, say, and then you come up with only 19 or 15 black sheep, so you know part of the herd. Where if you try to look and see if there's 2,000 sheep there, you can't tell by looking at them, but you can by counting these offers. That's how, even back in the Bible, you'll say, you know, and the goat, the sheep and the goats. And that's how they can tell, because when you get a big flock, you can't sit there and count. You don't hold still that long. But you can count whatever thought, the black sheep or the goat. That's when you start looking, when you don't have enough of the black sheep.
Mm-hmm.
That's
there, it's like anything else, it's like black cattle. It's an entirely a different kind. Usually they don't run too many black sheep, because up until the last few years, nobody wanted the black wool.
Yeah.
See, you can't dye it or anything, and so nobody really, the value on the black wool was no good. I think they
I never heard anything about that part.
Don't they eat black ones? I mean, I
sure are.
I mean, the same.
Heck, the meat isn't black when you when.
No, but I mean, it'd be just.
They end up as food.
But you could use the wool on a black.
Well, wasn't there superstitions about black things? I know we might have mother or dying of ever having a totally black cat. And I'm sure it was more than the fact that you can't find it.
It was a superstition.
Yeah. I don't know whether that would apply to the sheep part or not.
But I know the bull is You couldn't ever get any money out of a black pig.
They can now, though.
Oh, yeah.
Now you can't even find a police.
I never heard anything about that part at all. But you talking about black cats and rabbits across the highway. I laughed at my husband. I lived there in North Dakota and there were rabbits around. We moved to Casper, Wyoming. And he's going to go for a ride out of Casper, Wyoming. There wasn't too many places to ride out of Casper, except on the old highway. And we crossed the bridge across the Platte River and was climbing the hill, and there went a rabbit. Oh, he wasn't going to go. And I laughed my head off at him. I said, good gosh, you can't stop for a rabbit. I said, heck, they're all over the whole country. So he got something. He never stopped for a rabbit anymore. In fact, he used to. If you got a cocktail, I cooked me a cocktail.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but
they used to eat rabbits too until they got something or other.
Yeah. Tularemia. Tularemia or something like that. Yeah.
Okay, as far as I used to design with this.